Okay, we gotta go.
Well, I know you didn't do it, so I figured I would.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Well, good day, boys and girls, and everybody else. You know, men, women, others, undecided, and the rest of you all. And I can't keep up to all the pronouns anymore.
No, me neither. I don't know what to do with them. Who, what, where, why, when.
It's getting to be like fish, because if you go up north, they're all called one thing, and then you go to the middle south, they're called another. You come to Florida, they have different names.
Yes.
No matter what fish it is, your crappy, crappie, speckled perch, there's at least six names for crappies.
Right. And there's probably six different ways to catch them, depending on where you are in the country. That only that way works.
Only.
Only that way works.
Now, I guess the big thing and the big disappointment for everybody, I don't know how we're going to live through this. My brain can't comprehend that I'm going to make it through till tomorrow. It's amazing how people in the U.S. think now.
They think?
What's that? Both Robert and I hit the same point. Think?
Well,
think for themselves?
Remember.
React.
Years ago, if you didn't have one thing and had another, everything was still pretty good.
Right.
But back when they closed snook, redfish, and trout, people would come down and say, well, everything's closed. Why should I go fishing? There's nothing to catch. We have 2 dozen-plus species of fish here to catch.
Right.
On the tide chart, I did the tide chart specifically with edible fish on it. And those are ones that you could catch in the harbor. Not including the Gulf of Mexico or freshwater, just ones available in the harbor. And I think off the top of my head, I did, 11 species?
Something like that.
You know.
And those are all fish that can be caught from shore or a boat.
They're just fish caught in the harbor, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing that amazes me is up until yesterday, snook was going to open today.
Right.
And all I hear about is snook is closed. What do you mean snook is closed? Not one person has mentioned, well, at least they opened redfish.
Right.
Not. We had 50 to 60 phone calls yesterday asking about snook opening today and being very upset that it was closed. Not one phone call asking if redfish were open.
Right.
Now, redfish is as good or better table fare than snook. Admittedly, they have about half as much meat per inch as what a snook does. But it was just astounding to me how everybody focused on the negative.
And snook didn't open.
Snook is closed. Now, as far as I know, the whole mandate thing, everything they did with the emergency closures runs out as a whole and is no longer in anything in November.
Right.
As far as I know, with those rulings and all they did, they can no longer do any of that after November. So snook would open next year in April or May or whatever it does.
Yeah, I don't even remember anymore.
Yeah, it's been so long I don't even remember.
I think it's March.
March, April, May, I think it's open or something like that.
No, I think it's March and April.
March and April it's open.
Yeah.
Because
we got 5 inches in 5 months. That's how I remember it.
Okay.
So we got September, October, November. So, yeah, I think it's March and April. And then closes okay. May 1st.
It's just, you know, and I think everybody's rightfully you know, a little upset because they wait for the day before to bow to social media pressure and say, nope, we're not going to open it. And it's all about social media perception, and it's groups of people who decide what's good for everybody.
Right.
So the more you want to join a group and the more you want to become part of this group, that group, this captains, that captains, all these, and be careful of groups that say for this or save the anything like that. If it's for something, going to save something, 99% of those are scams, especially when they have to do with the environment, wounded soldiers. These are things that animals, you know, children, 99% of all this stuff. If it's for the, save the, they're scams. There are a few very good ones out there and some that have been torn down and come back as a better entity. But my general rule, if it says for the or save the, don't get involved. When you hear those two phrases, for so-and-so's for so-and-so, or so-and-so's save the blank, avoid it with like the plague, because they're scams. It's a way to make a lot of money without having to do anything. And only 0.5% of what they bring in has to go to the charity if they're a nonprofit. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. It's a very small amount of money.
It's less than 1%.
Well, remember the State Troopers Association and the Florida Sheriff's Association?
Yep.
They're all some big private company that contacted the sheriffs and said, hey, we can raise money for you. And they literally raised tens of thousands of dollars, of which the sheriffs get a check for about $1,200 a year.
It's literally staggering because I actually delivered tickets for one of those state trooper things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was living up in the panhandle many years ago, and I had a moped so I could run around cheap. And so I would get a bunch of them together. I get paid like $1, $1.50 a ticket to go deliver them. And it was, you know, all about the state patrolmen and all this, the ones that call you and get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ticket was like $5, I think. I don't remember how much the actual departments got, but it wasn't much.
No.
The biggest winner was always the solicitor calling you.
Right.
And most of the people doing the phone calls are great people. They really want to help, but they don't really realize where all the money's going. But remember, for the, or I'm for this, or save the, don't give them any money. Just politely say, oh, no, thank you. You know, and understand it's a scam. Why? A lot of people saying, well, Snook should be open. Some people say mostly it's charter boat captains and gangs of charter boat captains. Captains in general are the biggest ones against opening Snook in Southwest Florida. The weird part about Snook is that they are one of the only homebodies we have. Almost every other species grows up in Charlotte Harbor and then leaves as adults. Maybe coming back once a year to spawn, but a lot of them don't even do that. Once they're adults, some species don't ever come back. Pinfish, things like that. The ones that we get are the ones that are spawning as they leave and relying on those eggs to regenerate. Shrimp do the same thing. Shrimp don't live in Charlotte Harbor, but as they're migrating out, they spawn once or twice, and all summer long, what you're getting it for bait is the shrimp that were born last fall, last winter, in May, June, or June, July, and August, the peewee season.
Right.
Because the adults are all gone, and they never come back. They do that one spawn or two spawns, and psh, they're gone. So we rely each year on that migratory spawn to give us more shrimp. And many of the fish are like that. Snook does not happen to be one of those. Snook actually, they spawn around the barrier islands, incoming tides. The eggs wash up into the harbor, part of the plankton series. As they hatch out, and they get big. They migrate back into the creeks and everything, where for the first almost year, they can breathe air or water. They don't have to have oxygen in the water for them to survive. Redfish need the oxygen in the water all the time, but snook actually don't. They're like tarpon when they're young, according to most of the species. But, yeah, I was just reading about that.
That's pretty interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the first few months, the larvae can actually do air or water.
Really?
Okay. So that allows them to live in those just dead back creeks and stuff. But as they begin to actually look like a fish, they have to have the water and oxygen together.
Gotcha. That makes perfect sense. I think the biggest frustrating part about this is, you know, and we've talked about it, is observation science goes a long ways. But now, like everything in politics nowadays, there's far right, far left. They've taken it from scientist data to now listening to observation science.
I feel that we have a problem with the snook.
They're not splitting it down the middle. They actually picked the extreme side over the other instead of kind of trying to split it down the middle.
It's even worse than that. It's like, what happened to the science? Right. What happened to...
That's exactly what I was going to say, RJ.
I mean, screw it.
Nobody's using the scientific side of it.
Right. What's going on out there physically? What is happening? What are the biologists saying? What are the fishery scientists saying? That's the information we should be going on, not because
I was talking to somebody about sea level rise, and they're telling me, oh, well, Port Charlotte's not even going to be here in a few years. And I said, well, I'm sorry. Myself and President Obama disagree with you. Obama just bought millions of dollars worth of house on the water.
Yep, yep.
And where he lives, he's lucky to be 10, 12 feet off the water, sea level.
Right.
He's not very high up there. But I went on my phone and I did Google. I said, how much has sea levels risen since 1900? So that's 122 years, 7 to 8 inches. Somewhere between 7 to 8 inches is the total sea level rise in the last 122 years. Okay, there's science for you. But people don't feel like that's the truth. They think the water's come up several feet over the last few years. And I almost fell for that because I was looking at pictures, the paintings of Venice, Italy, from when, like, Leonardo da Vinci was alive, you know, hundreds of years ago. And there's several more feet of seawall there. And the houses are several feet higher from the water. What they don't tell you is the water didn't come up to the top of the seawalls. The seawalls came down towards the water. The whole city is sinking. Slowly, right. Slowly going into the ocean. So, is sea level rise real? Absolutely. Is it going to cover all the land in the world? Maybe. Maybe not. There's all kinds we don't know. But I was trying to think of why people would not want snook being open. And the vast majority are charter boat captains. What would you, RJ, what's the one thing that comes to your mind? If you're a charter boat captain, why wouldn't you want snook to open?
I have no idea.
Well, it's got to be. What would be the first thought in your head?
You know, I'm flummoxed on that, because if I was a charter boat captain, I'd be, everybody loves to catch snook.
And Robert, what would be the first thing that would come to your mind, why a charter boat captain would not want snook open?
Because they'd have to kill it and clean it.
Well, forget the killing part, but I'm going to go along with the cleaning part.
Yeah.
Snook, that takes a lot of time and effort to clean those fish.
Right.
Get the fillets out, clean them up, clean the boat afterwards. You're talking that by the time you're done with your trip, you've got a lot of extra work if you're flaying fish.
Right.
Well, but isn't that part of the job? I mean, isn't that what it comes with being a charter boat
if
captain?
If you can say, I believe in catch and release, and I don't believe in keeping fish, and you can get out of cleaning the fish. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm just listening, yeah.
You're not doing the charter boat thing. I was out there. I have cleaned thousands of snook, redfish, trout, all that kind of stuff. I've filleted so many fish, I can't even remember them. And it's a pain in the butt. It really is. It takes a lot of time. You know, you got to fillet the fish. You got to dispose of the carcasses. You're not supposed to put them back in the water. You're literally supposed to bag them up and throw them away, and which I never got, because if you put the carcass back in the water, the crabs and the minnows and everything eat the carcass.
Right.
But it doesn't look good. So if you do it by a public boat ramp, people come around, they go, oh, look at all the dead fish in the water, you know, and they freak out. So, you know, you got to bag them up, dispose of them and all that. But I would say a lot of them are thinking that if people can keep snook, then they're not going to catch as many during their charter.
Well, and that's probably true. That's probably true. If you increase the pressure on that fish, there's going
to
be less.
Harder
to catch. They're going to be more wary. There's going to be less of them. That's probably a good
Robert,
way to look at it.
Yeah, I don't agree with.
You don't have to agree. You can.
No, no. I mean, I agree with what he's saying as far as catching fewer snook and stuff like that. But I think there's a much greater issue going on, and I've been conflicted about it opening or closing since day one. You know, the biggest thing is it's been closed for 4 years. Have we seen a great deal of the snook come back of size? Have we seen a great deal of the redfish come back of any size? And the answer is really, honestly, no. Is there still a ton of snook out there? Yes.
Is there a lot of redfish out there?
No.
No?
Nope. I'll disagree with that one.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kind of like I think that they should have kept redfish closed and maybe opened the snook, just like I think they should have kept red grouper open but closed gag grouper. There's far fewer gag grouper out there than there is red grouper.
Right.
And, you know, they don't want to close down redfish. And I discussed this with Josh the other night about this. The reason why they're not going to close down redfish is because they would have to admit they're wrong, that their hatchery project isn't working.
Oh.
Now we get to the crux of it.
That, you know, we talk about on the show the ring of the simple truth. Sometimes you hear something and go, oh, boy, that makes sense. Yeah. And to admit that all the redfish they're releasing is not increasing the local populations, which, if everything goes right and the redfish do what they're supposed to do, it would never increase the local population. Because redfish are a migratory pelagic species. Pelagic, whatever you guys say it.
Pelagic, yeah.
But redfish grow up here, and when they become adults, they get up to around 30, over 30 inches. They join the big schools of traveling fish that come in, spawn, and leave. And they're here for 1 to 3 months.
Right.
But those fish just show up. They're here for a little while. Big party. You know, they got their bars all picked out. They know, you know, they meet the girls and off they go. Or the girls meet the boys, however you want to look at it. And poof, they leave. They don't see each other again. You know, they're not coming back for another year or two, because no one knows if redfish always spawn in the same spot or if they spawn in multiple places. That's one thing I've never been able to find out. Do the redfish leave here, do a spawn here, and do they spawn again in the Carolinas? Or do they spawn in Louisiana? Or where else do those redfish spawn?
That much I'm not sure about, but one thing that has been studied is that they actually do migrate back and forth between Tampa Bay and Charlotte Harbor. The same couple groups of fish will go back and forth.
They leave
throughout the whole spawning time, so August through October, they'll hopscotch back and forth.
And it takes them maybe a day. 2 days tops to go from Charlotte Harbor to Tampa. It's 1 to 2 days are there. So these fish are going back and forth between Tampa, Sarasota, Venice, Port Charlotte, back up and down. They go all the way down to Fort Myers or Estero and all the way back up to Tampa, all during the spawning season. So even when they're here, they're not actually here.
Right.
So you're never going to increase the redfish population by locally by dumping a lot of smaller fish in. What you are giving us is 1 to 2 years of some more fish. But once they spawn, theoretically, they're out of here.
Right.
And they're too big to keep, and people don't fish for them, you know. But building up numbers, it's really hard to build up numbers that way. And redfish got to be so big before they start to spawn. It's actually surprising to me. Snook, on the other hand, start spawning much smaller.
Right.
But snook, as I've done a little research and digging, and according to FWC, in their slot limit, if 40% of the fish that are under the slot limit go through the slot limit to be bigger than the slot, that's the ideal way for them to maintain their levels.
Right.
Right? So if you've got 100 fish that are, what's the slot, 26, 27?
28 to 33.
28 to 33. So if you've got 27 and a half inch, 127 and a half inch fish, they enter the slot, 60 of them are caught, but 40 of them grow big enough to be where you can no longer keep them. They say that is what they need at a minimum to keep the populations good on the east coast of Florida and separately on the west coast of Florida. Now, the west coast of Florida catches millions more snook a year than the east coast of Florida. On the west coast of Florida, including the ever disastrous red tide and all that other ones, I have not been able to find where the west coast of Florida was less than 40% fish going through the slot limit. Most of the time were 46, 47 to 52 or 53% of the fish going through the slot limit. So over 40. We have not gone below 40 any year I could find. Now, on the east coast of Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and all that, they have never achieved 40%. 38 is the highest I was ever able to find that went through the slot limit. So on the west coast, naturally, because we have never gone below 40% and have always been in the high 40s to 50 some percent. A couple years we dropped down low 40%, but never reached as low as 40%. We have shorter seasons, smaller slot limits, and less bag limit.
Right.
But on the East Coast, who has never achieved 40%, they have longer seasons, bigger slot limits, and better bag limits. Now, that makes perfect sense to me.
Well, right? Yeah, shouldn't they have wiped them all out on that side?
But
on the East
what
Coast?
I'm saying is...
Isn't that a formula for collapse of a species? You know, you're not,
you would think
you're not
so.
Making the number. And also, if you look at it too, it's a harsher environment on the Atlantic side for any species. You know, we've got relatively protected waters here, with a lot of places, mangroves and things like that. You get onto the East Coast and, you know, it's the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf Stream, and there's everything that could possibly eat you is there. And yet that fishery hasn't collapsed.
And we're doing, on average, 10% better of fish going through the slot limit. But once again, we're closed. They're open. They have longer slots, longer seasons. All that. So all this makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Because environmentally, we are following the science. Isn't that the point of this whole thing?
I guess.
It's...
Now, if any of you out there can figure out, and what I said, I'm pretty sure is true. I mean, you're never positive because you're reading on, you know, internet and books and all this kind of stuff. But as far as I could tell, what I said was true. So it's if you can understand why we're closed and the East Coast is not, let me know.
Yeah, it would be helpful.
Yeah, we don't understand it. We have no idea. But redfish is open. Now, fun thing about redfish is they like dead bait. They like live bait. They like live shrimp. They like dead shrimp. They like live pinfish. They like dead pinfish. Live greenbacks in the early part of the year, around April, May, June, is a very good bait for redfish. I would say less so in the fall, but as come around October, late September, early October, whitebait starts to work pretty good again on redfish.
Mm-hmm.
We've had captains that in that September, October redfish hunt that have put pieces of paper towel on a hook and with a on a jig head, cast it out, reeled it in, and have caught many redfish doing that. But basically, knowing all that, live bait, dead bait, whatever, I think having the perfect lure that's exact color and the exact size would have to be critical.
Yeah. I think at certain times of year it can be, but not really.
I mean, no, like, it's okay, Robert.
He waffled.
Well, like this time of year, for example.
So what do you think of this one, RJ? I'll let you describe it.
Oh, this is the DOA Deadly Combo. I really like this. Having used it numerous times, caught a lot of fish with it. It's basically a foam egg-shaped bobber. And it's got a shrimp, a DOA shrimp that goes with it to hang on the end.
And it's all pre-rigged, so all you got to do is tie your line to the top of the float and throw it on the flats or up against the mangroves.
Mm-hmm.
And when you keep your rod tip low to the water and give it a hard jerk, you hear this pocking splash, and it lets fish know the bait's there.
From what I've read, that splash for something that large, when it makes that splash, that tells the fish that somebody's having a meal.
Yeah.
Let's go check it out. Somebody's eating something. Let's go see what's going on.
The sound of a fish eating a bait or hitting the surface at attacking something. Good point. All right. So DOA Deadly Combo, we get a thumbs up for that one.
Oh, right? Yeah. Love that.
And this is the root beer colored shrimp. Now, would you say that's the right color right now, Robert?
Yeah, with the dark tan on water, absolutely. I'd go with dark colors.
So either white glow or root beer.
Yeah, I'm going from one extreme to the other.
But pink, chartreuse, and all that, I would probably avoid those right now.
I don't know about the
water to clear up a little bit.
What about every year everyone wants that electric chicken when it gets really dark like that?
Well, I was thinking, isn't it more later in the fall when the rain stops and the water's starting to get clear?
Well, it's usually when the rain stops, but the water's still usually pretty chocolatey.
But it's clearing up.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
What happens is when you get the sediment out of the water and it's that brown color,
mm-hmm.
clear water but brown in color,
right?
That's when the pinks and the neon chickens and all that seem to me to be the best. Now, I could be wrong because you're more in tune with that than I am. But I always started throwing pink and all these other colors once the rain has backed off and the water is actually clear but stained.
Right. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that one.
Okay, well, we'll go with maybe.
Yeah,
what you got there? What do you think?
I've got a weedless gold spoon. This one happens to be 3/4 ounce, which is not one that I would throw. I would throw the hammered weedless spoon, but I would be going more with this time of year, a 1/4 ounce or a 1/2 ounce if I was looking for redfish.
What about an 1/8 ounce?
Uh-huh. Definitely. I would absolutely throw an 1/8 ounce.
The smaller the better right
now. The smaller the better this time of year.
Yeah, yes. I've caught some of my biggest redfish on really small spoons.
Yeah, years ago when there was those redfish tournaments, what Danny would have us order us boxes of 1/8 ounce and 1/4 ounce this time of year because that's our best seller, even though everyone sticks with a 1/2 and 3/4 for the most part because it's confidence.
Half is as big as I would throw this time of year,
mm-hmm.
but I would stay. I usually end up throwing the 1/4 because the 1/8 ounce I know I can catch more fish with, but I almost got to have a water-filled bobber casting bubble.
Yeah.
Just to get it somewhere towards the redfish.
Yeah, I can't cast it at all.
You know, it's so light, it's just very hard to get any distance out of it. And at this time of year in Charlotte Harbor, it's all about the distance on the open water and the flats. And then as afternoon rolls around, you got to find shade.
Right.
They're looking for get under cover. They want to be, the more the green leaves are sticking out over the water, the shadier it is below that. And it's just like you. If you're sitting in a boat and you're wishing, gee, I wish I had some shade. boy, this guy could have bought a T-top. Same thing with the fish. They're sitting in that direct sunlight, 1 to 3 feet of water, it gets hot. They want to just go up in the shade. So in the morning time, they're scattered all over the flats. You got little dimples in the bottom, and that's where they seem to be. That's where the DOA deadly combo. Now, the big thing to me about that spoon is the hammered finish.
Yes.
Gold with a hammered finish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would think a smooth finish, hammered finish, wouldn't make much of a difference. But when you're looking at these and you see, you can picture what a smooth finish spoon would look like. Why would this hammered finish work so much? And I mean, literally, they're probably twice as good on redfish as a smooth finish spoon. Why would that make...
I think I have the answer.
Okay.
Having seen both types of spoons underwater, the smooth spoon gives you one flash, so you got one fish moving through the water. When you look at a hammered spoon going through the water, you see multiple flashes as it goes by, little flashes here, here, and there, and it probably mimics to the redfish that there's a school of minnows, whatever they may be in that general area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, and I've always done really well with hammered spoons, especially when it's hot out.
So are you calling that knowledge or BS, Robert?
I'm going to call that knowledge. And I think the other reason why it works really good on the redfish, because that surface area flashing more, redfish have pretty poor eyesight. So adding that extra reflectiveness, I think, definitely catches their attention more than anything.
Yeah, well, as the spoon moves through the water, it's making multiple flashes, one for every one of those octagonal dents that are in the hammered finish, as opposed to a single spoon making one flash.
Plus, I think that hammered finish is actually, that texture is creating a little bit different vibration in the water,
yeah.
So they can multitask with visual and lateral line picking it up at the same time.
All right, we're going to come back to the redfish, but we went out to test drive the boat. We had our first successful test run.
Oh, cool.
I ended up buying a new windlass, and he says, no, you got the right one for the boat. I said, no, I don't. How much bigger, how much more powerful can I get and put in that same footprint? And you remember when you're on the boat, you heard the anchor coming up, goes
yeah. Uh-huh.
It doesn't even do that at all.
Okay, good.
The only way you know the chain's coming in is by the rattling. You hit the switch, it says comes right up. We dropped it twice. We were at anchor twice.
Right.
And no problems. But we stopped and still fished, but I didn't have any floats. And the tide was really, really slow moving. And if you don't have bobbers when the tide is slow or almost stalled, you can't keep the baits out of the muck.
Right.
So I'm throwing sardines out, and we're out in one of the holes that's about 14 foot deep. And I should have been able to pick up a couple of small sharks or even mackerel or whatever. But every time we brought the baits in, they were just full of muck and weeds. It was, and I didn't have a bobber on the boat that I could find.
Mm-hmm.
I do now, but I didn't that day. So the only thing we caught was a catfish. So we decided, okay, we're going to move on. I know I was in a good spot, but without the bobbers, if I would have had bobbers, I would have put one very close to the bottom on a float. In 14 feet of water, I would have probably put it 13 feet down below the bobber. Now, you can't cast that, but the boat was at anchor, so I just throw it over, let the line feed out. But I would have had another one about 3 feet under a bobber, tossing it out, because that way I got the top and the bottom. And if I would have wanted another line, I would have split the difference between the 13-foot and the 3-foot, putting it somewhere around 8 foot of water or something like 8 foot down. But when you do those long drops off the float, you've got to remember you can't reel that in, so when the bobber gets close, you can take the bobber off the line and finish landing the fish. And there's no way to cast that much line either.
No.
So you just got to set it off the boat, leave the bail open. Once it gets out where you want it, close the bail again. But as we're moving, I always start off trolling 1,000 times over this program. We've talked about it. I start off around 2 miles an hour because I want to get my lures out, get everything set. And I put one of my favorite lures on the one side of the boat, my Storm Twitch Stick. And we're starting off about 2 miles an hour. My neighbor puts, Tom was with us, and we're going along about 2 miles an hour. He gets his lure out. He's kind of watching the stuff. I'm up in the flying bridge running the controls. So I bump up to 3, and I figure with the mackerel, I'm going to do it about 4 miles an hour. So I'm going through some very good areas, and we're going along about 4 miles an hour. Nothing. Probably 10, 15 minutes. I'm like, I know there's fish here. So I said, but we're going to head over by the reef because if they're not here, they got to be over there. So I'm up 6 miles an hour, 7 miles an hour. I get the boat up to 8 miles an hour, and my lure is either digging in the water or just laying on the top. It won't work. But he's using, and I sold it to him for fishing our canal, and he does pretty good with it. It's the R1123 Yozuri Crystal Minnow. It's the F, which is 3.5 inches long, quarter ounce. 3.5, the Yozuri Crystal Minnow F, little tiny lip on that. Now, at 8 miles an hour, what the Yozuri was doing was hitting the water, digging in, and then popping out of the water, hitting the water, digging in, popping out of the water, and probably the biggest Spanish mackerel I've seen caught in Charlotte Harbor whacked that. 33 inches, something like that.
Oh, yeah, big, all day long.
Big Spanish mackerel. 8 miles an hour, boys and girls.
That was the craziest part. I mean, the big Spanish mackerel is super impressive, but going against every rule ever when it comes to Spanish mackerel, because we've been teaching them for years, 2 to 4 miles an hour.
Yeah,
pretty much standard.
And sometimes I'll bump up maybe 5 or 6, but that was literally amazing. That, and we go along, and so we stop laying the fish, really cool, having a lot of fun, and we start going on again. Now, we'll say had at least 100 feet of line.
Oh, yeah.
Easy 100 feet of line.
Yeah.
And this lure is back there, and he was trying to get enough line to keep it in the water, which turned out not to be the right thing to do.
Right.
Getting it to pop out of the water and go down and dig. I think we caught like 6 mackerel on the way, but when we got over to the reef, I thought, all right, I'm going to slow down on the reef because we got fish on the bottom. They're going to have to see that lure come across, then go up and get it. So I'm back down to 4 miles an hour. Nothing. 5 miles an hour, nothing. Well, let's try it. I hit 8. Boom. Mackerel. I was like, 8 miles an hour. Freaked me out. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea. No idea why that would work. Like you say, it's against every rule we know about trolling for mackerel.
Absolutely. But we caught a bluefish.
Yeah.
And 3 of the mackerel were huge. We had like 2 or 3 that were smaller he put back because he had like 4 big mackerel.
Yeah.
It was crazy. There was 4 of us on the boat, so it didn't matter. But it was really weird to go that fast, and that's where the fish wanted to be.
Yeah, it made no sense to me because, I mean, watching you pick it up, pick it up, pick it up, I'm thinking, okay, well, now he's just moving from one spot to the other. Had no idea, and it was just surprising to me.
But that's exactly what I was doing.
I know.
I was just bored. I said, okay, I'm not going to troll here because we're not catching anything. Let's see how fast these lures can go. I'm doing 6, 6.5, 7, 7.5. The lures are holding. All of a sudden, they're popping out of the water a little bit, but I couldn't see them because it was kind of back behind the boat quite a ways. And I'm seeing my lure pop out, and it's just flopping on the top. And then I hit 8. Boom. I was like, but it didn't work with most lures.
It worked with jumping out of the water.
The crystal minnow, something about the lip, and that size is what did it. And it was the blue color, blue back. Now, I've got a few other colors, and we're out of the blues. A few people have heard about what we were doing. We were talking about it in the bait shop. And there was a guy I walked in the day after we were out trolling. And the guy said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm going to grab a lure because we were out trolling and really did good. What I didn't notice was my neighbor had already come in and bought two, and I went in and got one, and then the guy was following me along, and he would see what lure I picked up, and he would grab it off the wall, because he said, I guess if I was that interested, he was.
Right.
But that was crazy. I mean, everything I know about trolling, it was wrong, but it was correct.
Well, that jumping out of the water thing, there was a lure, and I can't remember the name of it, but it looked like a jet, you know, with the intake underneath and little nose. And for striped bass, this thing was a killer, especially around the jetties and some of the structure. You toss that thing out there, and then you'd snap the rod tip, and it would jump out of the water and go back down again. And then you'd reel it for a while, and then you'd snap it again. It would pop up out of the water. And that thing used to nail striped bass. And then I couldn't find them anymore. So,
well, I think Nomads brought out something like that again.
Yeah, but just a lure that leaves the water and enters back like a fish would, you know, not like you yank something out of the water and then it plops back down again. That seems to be effective. That sends some signal in the sound range to other fish that something's going on here.
No, it's definitely pretty wild how different all that was with the speed and the activity and everything else. It's just mind-boggling. Because, I mean, I've trolled that fast for barracuda, but never for mackerel. Not even king mackerel.
Out in the Gulf, pulling different types of lures, you know, the dolphin getters and the smokers and all that, I've been actually faster than that, but never in the harbor, never like that. Now, RJ, you got a couple lures there. What do you think of, which one would be your best pick for redfish? What do you have first, and why are you choosing one over the other?
It's the Rec Spoon, Silver Spoon, kind of like a Johnson Silver Minnow.
It's gold.
Is it gold?
Or brass.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's a brass. I'm looking at the light here up in the chrome tower of power. Everything looks like it's chrome. And it's got a red feather sticking out the end of it. And the other one is the Rapala BX Minnow.
Now, that's a balsa wood lure.
Yeah, that's what it says. And so it's going to be a real high-floating lure?
Not really high-floating, but very different than plastic floats.
Mm-hmm. For redfish, I would go with the gold spoon. That would be my first choice. Not that the Rapala is bad, because it's a gold-colored critter also, but
out of the two, you're going to go with the Rec Spoon with the red feather. I like that red feather, a little blood trail behind it.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I would think of it. Believe it or not, the balsa wood X-Wrap is one of my favorite lures in the flats. I love throwing crankbaits, but that one has got a beautiful finish to it. It's got kind of a gold pattern, so it's better in the dark water. They have the exact same one with a much lighter kind of white belly. And I use that one when the water clears up, this one when the water's dark. But I do so well with it. But I've been practicing with crankbaits for 50 years. And it's my favorite type of lure to throw. The minnow-looking hard baits. I throw more hard baits than I do anything else. Now with the spoon, what I like about that one is it's kind of wide in the hips. It's got a big butt.
Mm-hmm.
And that widen the hips, it's like, dang, she'd be good at childbirth, you know?
Yeah.
Look at the hips on her. Well, what that allows you to do is reel it very slowly.
Yeah, it's got a big curve to it also, more than you'd see on most spoons. You know, like the Johnson Silver Minnow is kind of flat. This one's got an arch to its back.
Little arch. And the trick to a spoon is not to have it roll over and spin. Wobbling back and forth. And that one, for its size, it's not particularly big, but from the nose back to the back, it's got big hips on it. It's got a fairly good sized butt for size of it. And then with that red blood trail behind it, or red feather, however you want to call it, I think it's a very effective redfish lure. Slow reeling, get it so it's wobbling back and forth. Now, if it was me, I would have gone the opposite way because of how I fish. I think you're more correct for 90% of the fishermen, but
Well, both of these lures will catch fish.
Oh, yeah.
It's just which one are you more comfortable with? Which one are you more confident with? And when I'm fishing for redfish with artificials, I've always done well with spoons. And so that's where I'm going to lean because I know how to move it. I know how to make it work. I know how to catch fish. I may not do as well with a crankbait.
And this is one of the things when you're working with people and they're asking about lures and stuff, I want to ask a little bit of history. What kind of lures do you usually throw? Not that I care what brand you're using, but if I can figure out what you're most comfortable with, then I can pick something from an array that would most likely catch fish with the way you like to fish. And that's what people get very frustrated with me because I'm asking them these questions, trying to get a little backstory. Not that I'm trying to, it makes no difference to me whether you like this one or that one, but if I know a little bit more, I can point you in a direction that would be better for you, because I do better with the crankbaits, you do better with the spoons, and that's the whole point of all this.
Well, to go back to striper fishing, there's some guys that fish with surgical tubes
right.
and a jig head. I have never caught a striper that way. I've caught them with other things, but there's guys that they nail them because they know how to make that lure move through the water properly, that it looks natural. Yeah, exactly right. So they're confident with that. If I handed them one of my crankbaits or diamond jigs or something like that, they would catch nothing all day long, too.
Right. So this is a good point. Now, Robert, we've got what do you got there?
You gave me the Yozuri. It's a 3D... slow sinking twitch bait, which for this time of year, I definitely like something that's slow sinking and something that I can work extremely slow with. I did learn something new though that I think is pretty neat. I never saw that before, but that's not surprising. They tell you the hook size of the lure and the split ring size for the lure.
Oh, on the Yozuri?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
I'm doing more and more and more with the Yozuri stuff over the last few years, and over this last year, I've really been doing a lot more with Yozuri. What was it, 10, 15 years ago, we used to do a lot of Yozuri stuff,
yeah.
And then we had a lot of problems, some of it just company policy, some of it they screwed up the lures, but they've been coming back, and Yozuri is actually, I think the smartest thing they've done is bring back the older styles, the older colors, and not redid the lure in a new image. Literally just brought back some of the colossal success they had in the 90s and early 2000s. They got away from for new stuff, and now they've got some of that new stuff, but they're going back to a lot of their older stuff that really worked.
Right.
Now, what's the other one you got there?
The other one is a weedless gold spoon. It's also a hammered finish, but this one's really cool, and this is one of the reasons why I like weedless spoons. This one's actually got a skirt already on the back of it.
What is it?
Northland.
Oh, this is the Northland Jawbreaker Weedless Spoon. Now, this has got gold-red finish with the silicone tail on it. Does it have a rattle on it?
No.
No.
Nope.
Oh, no, I think it does.
Does it?
It might have. It's hard to tell if it's rattling in the package.
Yeah, I think it's just rattling in the package.
But that's a pretty awesome-looking spoon.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's they saved me a step, basically, by having that skirt on the bottom of it.
Yeah, you don't have to put a trailer on it. It's no trailer, it's already all done, it's rigged up. It's got some really nice bright finish with some dark colors, which is perfect for right now. And
I like that it changes the profile and it'll change how to sink and how to swim altogether. That's why I like a weedless spoon, because it's three lures in one. You can drag it or jig it off the bottom. You can do the slow to moderate retrieve, or you can burn it back to the boat depending on the species or time of year. But you can also change its profile by, like, that skirt. Just amazing how diverse it is. And I'm a terrible spoon fisherman. Your father was amazing at it. I'm terrible at it.
Now, out of the three, The Eppinger, made in America, nice spoon, the Rex spoon. It's got a narrow with the biggest back end on it. The Jawbreaker is got the narrow front, but it's a little more streamlined. It doesn't quite flare out. And the Bagley's, which is the hammered gold spoon, which I will, for redfish, I will take a hammered gold spoon over any other spoon, period. No matter the brand, import, export. I don't know if the Bagley's made here in the U.S. or not. I think so, but I'm not positive. It's, nope, China. But anyway, there is, the Rex spoons are made in America. Most of the other stuff is imported, but we have a bunch of made in America spoons on the wall over there.
Clark spoons.
Clark spoons are made in America. There's several. We're going after more and more made in this hemisphere products wherever we can. But snook is out of season, but yay, redfish is open. So you can keep redfish, trout, mangrove snapper, sheephead, spadefish, triple tail,
whiting,
pompano,
cobia.
Cobia. I mean, sea trout. We didn't even touch on sea trout. Redfish.
Right.
Those are just a couple. Anyway, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, RJ up in the golden chrome towers of powers, and we're out of here a little late. Sorry about that, boys and girls. Bye.
Hook, sinker, and line.